Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are posing far greater dangers to our enduring Constitution than even the horrible, despicable, and illegal rioters did on Wednesday. Why? The rioters? That's a one-day incident. But these two leaders are now trying to distort the Constitution and turn it into a political weapon under the 25th Amendment, the impeachment provisions, and the First Amendment. Don't let them get away with it. It's our Constitution, and we have to preserve it. You'll hear why on The Dirt Show. This has been a bad week for our Constitution. I'm referring not only to what happened on Wednesday when a group of violent protesters took over the Capitol building and wreaked havoc, causing deaths and injuries. That was a terrible, terrible, terrible event. No, it wasn't an insurrection. No, it wasn't treason. No, it wasn't a coup. No, it wasn't even terrorism. Let's not diminish the power of words like terrorism. We know what terrorism is. Terrorism is taking people and cutting their heads off for a political purpose, hijacking an airplane and blowing it up, blowing up an airplane in midair like Pan Am flight. We know what terrorism is. This was not terrorism. This was not an attempted coup d'etat. Nobody thought that it would end up with a change in the election or a change in government. It is what it is. A violent protest that was illegal, that was unconstitutional, that violated the rule of law, and that was put down. There are going to be many arrests. There are going to be interesting trials, much like the trials that occurred on the other side of the political spectrum. I was involved in some of them. The Chicago 7 case, which grew out of riots and violence in Chicago during the Democratic Convention of 1968. I remember that well. I remember trials that grew out of other events, anti-war protests, demonstrations, etc. Let's not elevate what happened on Wednesday above what really occurred. Yes, it was the Capitol, and that made it different. There have been attempts to take over state capitals before, even the federal capital. Nobody got into it like this. But back in our history, there have been protests in and around the Capitol building. It was bad. It was very bad. But it wasn't a direct challenge to the Constitution and democracy. It was a stress test. And the Constitution survived. Not only it survived, it won in every way. Congress got back to doing its business. They voted against what the protesters wanted. Several members of the Senate and Congress withdrew their objections based on what the rioters did and what the violence doers did. They failed. They failed miserably. The President of the United States issued a statement on television yesterday, saying that we have to move toward reconciliation, we have to move toward transition, that he acknowledges that the next president of the United States will be Joe Biden. Again, the Constitution won. The rioters lost. It was a one-day, actually, 4 or 5 hour event, a terrible event. Deaths occurred. A woman who was trying to climb in through a window was shot and killed. That shouldn't have happened. The use of lethal force should be reserved for self-defense or protecting others when lives are in danger. Yeah, you can understand that in the midst of an event like this, a policeman would think that climbing through a window might endanger the lives of members of Congress. But to shoot lethally somebody who was engaged in such behavior just is not justified, regardless of race, regardless of politics, regardless of which side you're on or which foot the shoe is on. That's wrong. And people who caused those injuries and deaths have to be held accountable. But it's becoming a worse week for the Constitution, because people who ought to know better, particularly incoming Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, are posing greater dangers to the Constitution of the United States, to its enduring quality, to the First Amendment, to the 25th Amendment, to the criteria for impeachment, These two political leaders and many of their followers, mostly Democrats, but some Republicans as well, and some academics, and many in the media, many pundits, are posing a greater danger to the durability of our Constitution than the thugs and rioters did, or than the president did, by a speech that many believe was ill-advised. Why? Again, because the incidents on Wednesday were a one-day event. It's over. We won. But now, the leaders of the Democratic and Republican congressional groups are calling for a destruction of the Constitution. They want to invoke the 25th Amendment. Well, I know a lot about the 25th Amendment. And the 25th Amendment was not designed to end the term of a president 12 days before he's scheduled to leave office because he made a speech that many disagree with. It was designed to make sure that when a president was unable to serve, that's the words, unable to serve, which means incapacitated, in surgery, having been shot, having suffered a heart attack, a stroke the way Woodrow Wilson did at the end of his, near the end of his a term, Ronald Reagan being shot and hospitalized and under surgery, even presidents going in for a colonoscopy, which makes them unconscious for a few hours, the 25th Amendment is supposed to operate. It's not a political tool. It's not designed to be used by one party against another party. You know, the word coup d'etat has been used. What happened in Washington on Wednesday was not a coup d'etat. It was not an attempted coup d'etat. It was not an effort to remove a sitting president by force or violence. It was a violent and illegal and unconstitutional protest. But what Schumer and Pelosi are doing comes much closer to the term coup d'etat by law, coup d'etat by misuse of the Constitution. The idea of ending a presidential term by willfully and deliberately misleading and misreading the terms of the Constitution, that comes closer to the definition of a coup d'etat. To be sure, not a coup d'etat by force or violence, but a coup d'etat by deliberate misreading of the Constitution. The 25th Amendment simply is not applicable. The President of the United States is not incapacitated. He is not unable to complete his term. Schumer and Pelosi just don't like him. They don't like his politics. They don't like his speech. And they won. They campaigned against him. And their candidate won. The candidate will be president. But the idea of stretching the words and creating out of the 25th Amendment a political weapon, and you think this is going to be the last time it's used, if it's used this time, forget about it. As my friends in Brooklyn say, forget about it. It will become a standard weapon, just the way framers of our Constitution were worried that if the impeachment clause were misused, it too would become a routine and normal part of our political system. No, the 25th Amendment and the criteria for impeachment were designed for specific and very designated purposes. If you have somebody in the White House who has committed treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors, and that's all, they can be impeached and removed. President Trump did not do any of those things, and there's no reasonable case to argue that he did. I made that argument on the floor of the Senate. I've made it in my articles. I've made it in my books. I've never seen it satisfactorily responded to, except emotionally, but not historically and not logically. And the 25th Amendment is even easier. Go back to the history of the 25th Amendment. Go back to the reasons it was enacted. The 25th Amendment was enacted because there was an omission in the criteria for impeachment. Criteria for impeachment required criminal-type behavior. What if a president didn't engage in criminal-type behavior? What if he suffered from Alzheimer's? What if he suffered from other incapacities? So we needed an amendment to the Constitution to fill that gap. It was not designed to give the opposing political party a partisan weapon to be used against the president you don't like. Because if it's used against President Trump, it will be used against Democratic presidents in the future. A friend of mine who's a psychologist said it's designed to be used against people who show a lack of judgment. A lack of judgment? Has any president ever not been accused of a lack of judgment? Going to war in Iraq, was that a lack of judgment? Dropping the second bomb on Nagasaki, was that a lack of judgment? Locking up 110,000 Americans of Japanese descent in concentration or detention centers in the Second World War, was that not a lack of judgment? Every president has been accused of a lack of judgment. To invoke the 25th Amendment because a president, in the view of some people, lacked judgment is not what the 25th Amendment was designed to do. Remember the Goldwater Rule. Barry Goldwater, who today would be a centrist conservative, probably an anti-Trump, McCain centrist conservative. Barry Goldwater, when he ran for a president against Lyndon Johnson, a group of psychiatrists, they called themselves psychiatrists, but they were really acting as political partisans, issued a statement saying they thought Barry Goldwater was mentally ill. None of them had ever met Barry Goldwater. None of them had ever spoken to him. None of them had ever seen him in person, but they didn't like his politics. So they said he was mentally ill. It's hard to remember a more stable person in American politics than Barry Goldwater. But, you know, more than 1,000 psychiatrists said he was nuts. He was insane. He was certifiable. He was mentally ill. And so the American Psychiatric Association issued a rule saying no psychiatrist should ever diagnose a political figure or anybody else without examining them. You abuse your trust as a psychiatrist, as a member of the medical profession, when you conflate political disagreement with mental illness. And that's what's going on now with the 25th Amendment. So, yes, there were dangers posed by the rioters, the looters, the others who went into the Capitol. Yes, they should be punished. Yes, the Constitution was challenged. And yes, it passed its stress test. But a far greater danger to the Constitution is posed when the majority leader of the Senate and the Speaker of the House both want to trash the Constitution in the name of a 12-day partisan advantage. Shame on them. They should be held politically accountable for their attempt to undermine the Constitution of the United States. As you know, if you've watched the Durst Show or read my books or columns, I care more about the Constitution of the United States and its enduring quality. The oldest written constitution in the history of humankind is in danger. I care more about the Constitution and protecting the Constitution than I care about partisan politics. I defended President Trump against impeachment not because I voted for him. I voted for Hillary Clinton. I voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016. I supported her. I campaigned for her. I contributed to her. And yet, when she lost and President Trump won and they tried to impeach President Trump, I opposed that. Not because I was a Trump partisan, but because I'm a constitutional partisan. I believe that the Constitution means what it says, and if it's to endure, it cannot be broken. It can be stretched. You can interpret it. You can argue reasonably what particular words mean, but you cannot take the words of the Constitution and turn them into partisan weapons, which is what Schumer and Pelosi are trying to do with the 25th Amendment and impeachment. So I hope that wiser heads will prevail, that more neutral and objective views will come to the top, and that we will simply allow President Trump to finish out his term just another week and a half. Will he do things that people disagree with? Perhaps. Will he engage in activities? Will he make speeches? He's not going to tweet because he's not allowed to tweet. Twitter has taken over and said, no, we're not going to allow the president to tweet. Facebook said, we're not going to allow the president to get on Facebook. We're not going to allow his millions of viewers, his millions of followers to hear his voice on our platform, because after all, we're just a platform. Under Section 230 of the Decency Act, we're not allowed to censor or make decisions. We're just a platform. We're just something that people can put things up. Well, Rumble's a platform, but YouTube is no longer a platform, and Twitter is no longer a platform. It's a partisan political tool that can be used for purposes that were unintended by Section 230. And Section 230 must be amended, or at least interpreted, not to apply to platforms that censor. Because remember, When YouTube says, or when Twitter says, we're not going to put President Trump's statements up there because they're not true, they claim, or because they may incite, or because of other things, then you have to ask yourself, why do they allow other things to go on? Why do they allow blatant lies, falsehoods, defamations, bigotry of every kind on there? Doesn't that send a mixed message? When you say certain things are censored, but other things are permitted, doesn't it sound like these platforms are saying the other things that are permitted, we vetted them and they're true, so you should believe them? No, that's not the business that these platforms are in. Now, does that pose a danger to our Constitution? No, they're not bound by the First Amendment. They're private, more or less. They are really so powerful that the question arises, what is the line between private and public when it comes to massive social media and communications? And I think Congress will be dealing with some of those issues, and so will the courts in some of the antitrust cases that are now pending. But they certainly do pose a danger to the culture of the First Amendment, to the marketplace of ideas, to the freedom of Americans to pick and choose. You know, judgment is important in a president, but it's not a criteria under the 25th Amendment. It's a criteria for who you vote for. And the American people voted. And the American people's vote will come into fruition on January 20th. So we won. The Constitution won. Let's not try to fix it. It's not broken. And what Schumer and Pelosi are doing are not trying to fix the Constitution. They're trying to distort the Constitution so that it becomes a weapon that can be used for their own purposes. Beware of weaponizing the Constitution, because a weapon used today against President Trump and the Republicans will be used tomorrow against the president you voted for and your party of choice. We don't get to decide whether the Constitution applies to good guys or bad guys, liberals or conservatives, progressives or regressives, Democrats or Republicans. The Constitution is an enduring document. As John Marshall, the great Chief Justice of the United States, said, it is a constitution we are expounding, a document that is intended to endure for the ages. And so Pelosi and Schumer, don't destroy our Constitution. Don't do what the rioters tried and failed to do. You're better than that, and you're in a much more important position than that. Your job is to protect and defend the Constitution, not to weaponize it. So I want to hear your views. They will not be censored, whether you express your views on Rumble, whether you express your views on any of the more censorial websites or platforms. I'm here to listen. I'm here to respond. So let's turn to our viewers and listeners and their hard questions and critical comments on The Dirt Show. We begin today with what we call Rumble Wits, the wits provided by the viewers and listeners on Rumble, the uncensored platform, which I am so proud to be on and which so many of you have subscribed to The Dirt Show on Rumble. So here are the Rumble Wits questions today. First is a pair, a question and an answer. Sorry, you are 100% totally wrong. Kindly keep the liberal Fox propaganda on the big censorship networks and platforms. And then the response, oh no, he can 100% bring that here. That's the kind of point of free speech. If you want only to see content that you like, then you are no better than the people on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Look, I'm not going to censor anything that comes on this show. You have a question, I'm going to read it. You have a comment critical of me, I'm going to allow it to be expressed. I'm going to answer. I'm not going to sit silently by and allow your points of view to go unanswered. But yes, I am not repeating anybody's propaganda. I am not anybody's hack. I am not anybody's voice. I am my own voice. And you are your own voices. And on The Dirt Show, you get to have your voice heard. So let's go to the next Rumblewitz question. And it's an ironic rhetorical question. You mean peaceful protesters, right? No, I don't mean peaceful protesters. These people were not peaceful protesters. Some of them were. some of them that stood outside. Look, there were at least three categories of people that we're talking about on the Capitol. Those that went to the Capitol, stood outside, and flew banners, perfectly constitutionally protected, just like any other peaceful demonstration. That's category one. No, none of those should be arrested. They exercised their First Amendment rights. I hate what they said. One of them wore a T-shirt with Auschwitz on it. Another had another shirt that talked about, you know, racism and Confederate flags. They are entitled to express their bigoted and racist views, perfectly constitutionally protected. Then there were the trespassers, and they violated the law, but they violated the law in a relatively small way. Now, when it's the Capitol, it's a big deal, but still, it's trespassing. Justice Brandeis, in a concurring opinion 100 years ago, said that trespassing on private property is a serious matter. I'm talking about private property, not the Capitol. But nonetheless, we shouldn't prosecute people who are protesting if all they do is trespass. So that's category two. Reasonable people can disagree about that. The third category, nobody can disagree about. They were not peaceful protesters. They broke windows. They broke desks. They stole things. They walked out with lecterns, with electronic equipment. They may have taken material that involved national security. We don't know that yet. There were shootings. There were deaths. No. I will not allow anybody to call them peaceful protesters. They are violent protesters. I eschew, I don't use the term insurrection, coup, terrorists, treason. Those are overblown, and those diminish the force of those powerful words. But nonviolent, they were violent. Our next question comes on the Rumblewitz. My first and likely my last comment. The Capitol building is no longer the people's house. They should have burned it down. Now, Twitter would obviously take that down, and Facebook might very well take that down. Here is somebody who is advocating a serious felony, burning down the Capitol building. I don't know if he intended to do it with people in it or people not in it. But nonetheless, burning down the Capitol building is not constitutionally protected. It's wrong. But if you want to advocate it and feel foolish and listen to the responses, I would say 99% of my viewers and listeners will rebuke you. No, protests are one thing. Burning down the Capitol is quite another. And it is still our house, and it is still the place where legislation, whether you approve it or not, is enacted. So let's preserve our Capitol. Let's allow protests outside the Capitol. You know, we're going to need new rules now. There will probably be fences outside the Capitol the way they are outside the White House, and protests will only be allowed a certain distance from the Capitol, and there'll be reinforcements in the Capitol and greater measures taken to protect people from entering the Capitol in an unauthorized way. I remember when I came to the Capitol last year, just about a year ago now, to present my argument against the president's removal in the Senate. I was there with my wife and my son, and we had a heck of a time getting into the Capitol. We had to go through this door and that door. We had to be checked. We had to show our passports. We had to go through metal detectors. We had to do everything. But these violent protesters just pushed through, and they should be prosecuted for that. But it's still our house, and we have to protect it. Okay, next, Rumblewitz, a question. It's good to see you here. Thank you. With all due respect, I agree with other commentators. Even if the Constitution held yesterday, in the bigger picture, the Constitution is in some trouble. When a large portion of our politicians and our judiciary see the Constitution as an obstacle to be circumvented or as a partisan weaponry rather than our fundamental rule of law for all, the Constitution is not holding strong. It is being bent and twisted. I couldn't have put it better. I agree with you completely. I think that what Pelosi and Schumer are doing is twisting and turning the Constitution and turning it into a weapon. You know, when I was a kid, there were some nasty people in our neighborhood that used to make zip guns. They could make it out of a piece of wood, a rubber band. I don't want to give a prescription for doing it. I never made one. I don't know how to make it. But I remember when people used to come around our neighborhood and show us the zip gun. You could take wood and turn it into a lethal weapon. And that's what's being done now. People are weaponizing the Constitution. They're taking the words of the Constitution, written 200 and something years ago, and turning them into weapons. That's not what the framers intended. Hamilton and Madison would be turning over in their graves if they heard Pelosi and Schumer trying to distort the Constitution as a partisan political weapon. Okay, next question is, ridiculous! The Constitution has been trampled on by all three branches of government and the media. Cooperation with any of those criminal organizations is tantamount to treason. No, it's not. Treason is defined with great particularity in the Constitution. Basically, it's taking up arms against your country on behalf of an enemy. It doesn't mean disagreeing politically. No, the media isn't committing treason. No, the people like Pelosi and Schumer, though I disagree with them, are not committing treason. They're just wrong. Why do we need to use the word treason? Just say they're wrong. That's what I do. The next question is, it uses a word that we won't use, but BS. The Constitution has been violated and the violation is holding strong. Well, it depends on what you mean. If you think it's holding strong in relation to the breach of the Constitution by the violent rioters, you're wrong. They lost. They lost in every format, in every forum. They were defeated. They were hurt, and rightfully so. But if you're talking about what's happening now politically, you may very well be right. Our final Rumblewitz question today is from Red Guitar. The Constitution did not pass the stress test. Numerous state executive and legislative branches dumped on the Constitution in front of everyone and then collectively spit in America's face. The federal agencies did nothing but stand by and watch, bought and paid for. If the Constitution is not upheld in such egregious circumstances, then it's a worthless document. The Republic has failed. Wrong. It succeeded. These claims were tested. They were tested in court. They were tested in the legislature. All three branches of the government, all three branches of the government have now agreed that the election produced the new president who will be sworn in on January 20th. Not only all three branches of the government, but the media as well. Even the extreme right-wing media has now acceded to that. So, no, the Constitution prevailed. The Constitution survived. We will have a new president, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, whether it makes you happy or unhappy. I have now voted for president since John F. Kennedy in 1960. I've liked some of the results. I've disliked some of the results. You win some, you lose some. That's the nature of American democracy, and American democracy is holding strong. What I don't like is watching around the world all these hypocritical countries condemning America for what happened on Wednesday. Hey, look in your own backyards, folks. Europe is no model of democracy, certainly not historically. The Middle East, with the exception of Israel, is no model of democracy. So be careful who you criticize. And before you criticize, look in the mirror. If you're a Christian, remember the great word of Jesus. Let he who is without sin cast the first stone. We're seeing too many stones cast by too many sinners among nations. Hey, great questions from Rumblewitz. You know, some of you I put down. I didn't like what you said, but we have a dialogue going. So if you don't like my answer, call in. I want to hear your voices. Tell me why I'm wrong. Let's continue to have a dialogue with Rumble, a dialogue with the other platforms as well. And let's now turn to our first verbal caller, Harvey.
Good morning. It's Harvey in Henderson. My question is, can a sitting senator be sued for defamation for things he says off the Senate floor? And can a president-elect be sued for defamation for things he says prior to being sworn in? Thank you so much. I've been trying to research this on my own, and I cannot find it. I'm predicting Tony Bobulinski might file the defamation lawsuit of all times in the coming few months. Thank you. Be well. Bye.
The Constitution provides that Senator Congressman shall not be held accountable for anything they say on the floor of Congress or on the way to and from Congress. And that's been construed pretty broadly. So in general, I would say members of Congress can't be sued for defamation. Can a president-elect be sued? Probably. The president-elect doesn't really have a position in government. The government recognizes that status for certain purposes, but I don't think it immunizes a president-elect from defamation lawsuits. Our next call is from Jackie.
Hello, my name is Jackie, and I live in Manhattan. I was just watching the Rumble, and I was listening to you, and I agree with a lot of what you said in terms of the rule of law, the First Amendment, and who's to blame. But what scares me and a lot of Americans is the fact that this president, over 4 years, has lied vociferously and has pushed back every other day on things that he's said and would happen. How can you believe him when he says there'll be a peaceful transition with 12 days left and more damage he can do? Because he can't be trusted. That's what I don't understand. That's what scares me and worries me and my family. Anyway, thank you.
I appreciate the call. There are many checks and balances in place. We now see that there are some members of his cabinet who are resigning in protest, other members of the administration. We have the courts, we have the legislature. And I thought that the statement that President Trump made on television was very conciliatory. He did commit himself to a peaceful transition. I've been pushing for that right from the beginning. I'm confident it will happen. And we will see in the next 12 days, hopefully maybe some progress made on the Middle East. Maybe we'll see some more pardons and commutations of deserving people. Yes, the president still has a lot of power, but it's not unchecked power. Our system of checks and balances imposes constraints on every government official, regardless of how high they are or whether you agree or disagree with them. Our Constitution really does work. Our last phone call is from Robert in Florida.
Good morning, Alan. Gotta ask you, maybe you might touch something. Gotta admit that I'm a Trumpaholic or whatever, and it's sort of like I'm heavily questioning on my mind. Did he have evidence, or was just not ever allowed to demonstrate the evidence of a theft? It just blows my mind, because my mind jumps to the thing of, oh, the election was ripped off. But there is just so much blasted evidence that I've seen on the web and so forth that point otherwise. Need somebody to at least take a look in that thing and point the direction of it.
Look, I couldn't agree more, which is why I have proposed what we call VIP, Voter Integrity Panel. I think for the future, really starting on January 20th, we ought to appoint a commission, an existing commission, a commission that remains in effect all the time, consisting of perhaps a few former judges, maybe a former justice of the Supreme Court, presidents of universities, major religious leaders, all nonpartisan, and make sure that the commission is completely nonpartisan. And so when you have any complaint about an election, either before the election, during the election, or after the election, it can be brought in front of this commission. We don't have to depend on CNN and Fox debating the issue. We don't have to depend on CNBC and Newsmax. We don't have to depend even on the Durst Show, which you trust because I never allow partisanship to enter into my discussions. And the answer to your question is, I don't know. I know that there were some constitutional concerns about the election. Pennsylvania was the most striking. In Pennsylvania, we know that the court essentially overruled the legislature and expanded the day for receiving write-in ballots by 3 days. That may have been a good decision on the merits, but it does seem inconsistent with Article 2 of the Constitution that delegates all authority to the state legislature. So that's a legal issue. And then there were the very, very broad factual issues about the voter fraud, about the computers. I think that kind of issue should be subjected to nonpartisan scrutiny. And we will see what it finds. Right now, there are too many Americans, according to Ted Cruz, I don't know whether his statistics are right or wrong, something over 30% of Americans believe the election was not proper. That's too many Americans believing that. And I think if we had a commission, there'd still be a few. There'd still be some who say, oh, the commission's rigged, oh, they're paid off, oh, they're part of the deep state. You'd get all those arguments, one side and the other. But I think as to most of the people in that group of current doubters or skeptics would be satisfied by an objective assessment and report about what happened. Remember 9/11. When 9/11 happened, we heard all kinds of crazy rumors. It was the CIA. It was the Mossad. It was this. It was that. We had a 9/11 commission consisting of very prominent bipartisan, not nonpartisan. Many of them were partisans, but there were partisans on both sides. They came up with a commission report, which was widely believed. The Warren Commission, not so widely believed. So not every commission always works. In many countries in the world, England and Israel in particular, they have what are called royal commissions, or commissions that are set up to investigate terrible events that occurred and give an assessment. And those commissions have great credibility. So while I'm not in favor, and the Senate and Congress rejected Ted Cruz's, Senator Cruz's, call for a commission to investigate this investigation in 10 days. I didn't think the calendar permitted for that. I do favor the creation of a nonpartisan commission for the future to look into what will inevitably be claims in every single election of problems, fraud, difficulties, unconstitutionalities. Let's make sure that the American people believe that our elections are legitimate. Not only must the elections be legitimate, they must be seen to be legitimate. Hence the VIP panel. I hope it's taken seriously. Please make other suggestions and proposals to the Dirt Show, either on Rumble by email or by phone calls. I will read your emails. I will show your questions and listen to your questions, and I will answer them, and you will get answers on the Dirt Show. An important part of the Dirt Show is your voice, your questions, your comments. Please call 24/7. The number is 216-710-0050. Keep your comments short and to the point. Again, the number for you to call 24/7 is 216-710-0050. Hard questions, criticisms, everything's fine. Just keep your questions short, and I'll answer them all on the Dirt Show.